This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Aaron Cleary to the show. He is the resident economist and author of Enjoy the Decline, Accepting and Living with the Death of the United States. So this ought to be an interesting discussion. He's the author of 5 books in total, and we're going to focus on this one today. Aaron, welcome. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, Jason.
It's good to have you on. And are you in Minneapolis, St. Paul?
I am in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Great. It's always good to have a sense of geography when we have our guests on the show. So Enjoy the Decline. Are things really that bad, Aaron?
Yes. The short answer is yes, they are that bad.
In what way are you talking about it from a debt perspective in terms of the country's debt and its obligations that it cannot possibly pay? Are you talking about the culture war? Are you talking about the unemployment rate? You're talking about inflation, deflation? In what way are we declining?
Pretty much in every way, and certainly economically and financially. Some people, when you get outside of something as literal as that, that cannot be measured more like, say, culturally or something, then it becomes a little bit more debatable. But pretty much on every front, I'd have to say yes. Certainly economics, and which is the focus of the book, because if we didn't have the world's reserve currency, we would have been facing the consequences that Greece and soon to be Portugal and Spain are facing. But the economics alone is enough. The country is not sustainable. As much as we'd like, as many as people who lived or grew up in the 80s and said, oh yeah, America's number one, oh yeah, we won World War II, in the end, we have to face the mathematical reality that what we're doing is no longer sustainable. And so at minimum, and the sole argument is economics and financial, once that's gone, that's gone. But yes, you could look at it in terms of dating, marriage, unemployment, education, pretty much every aspect of America is in decline or deteriorating, or at best is stagnant. And we have to live up or at least accept that fact and live our lives by it.
I want to play devil's advocate with you because I agree with you when we're talking about the economic picture, the unsustainable debt, the irresponsible government spending, the pandering to the population to buy votes. I mean, it's just disgusting, and it disgusts me on a daily basis. However, because we have the reserve currency, and more importantly, Aaron, the military force to keep it that way, I would argue that we can, as unfair as it is, that we can maintain this hegemonic status for a long, long time. I mean, we can be irresponsible in the U.S. and kick that can down the road for many more decades, as we have for many past decades. Thoughts on that?
You're 100% correct. And I even wrote a post recently that Gen X and the millennials even maybe may actually see a Social Security check or a Medicare check. So yes, because we have this world reserve currency, not to mention, as you say, the U.S. military, and I would even go so far as to say we're the least corrupt large economy. You know, it was cute that China and Russia with the corruption indices of, you know, 95 plus thought that they were going to launch a counter world reserve currency. As bad of a condition that we're pretty much the only game in town. And yes, you're right. It absolutely is immoral. I find it disgusting. I'm angered by it. But you're right. We can kind of thumb our nose at the rest of the world and go nanny, nanny, boo, boo. We have the world's reserve currency and we can print off as much money as we want, sell as many government bonds as we want, because the world will buy it.
They have to buy it. We're basically now, I would argue that under the table, in the sphere of the economic hitman, I had John Perkins on the show. You're probably familiar with his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and his other books like A Game as Old as Empire. They're quite interesting, by the way. We are already forcing the rest of the world to buy our debasing currency and our debasing debt. We're in the bully pulpit, you know? I mean, it's not right. I'm just saying it is, you know, like I said before.
No, it's not right. It's immoral. And also, in the long run, it's not sustainable. See, I'm an economist first and foremost. And philosophically, morally, ideologically, I can't be for a country that's not sustainable or a system that is not sustainable. And this isn't, not to mention it's immoral and wrong. But if you want to look at it from purely a Machiavellian standpoint, yes, this is great. This is wonderful. I get to buy this laptop on the cheap because of currency manipulation and currency wars, and it keeps the yuan down. But the argument I make with Enjoy the Decline is not so much for this generation. I used to think that maybe Gen X and the millennials were going to bite it. But now, after seeing the past, especially 5 years of currency manipulation and central banking shenanigans, I think that we'll be okay. Look, I'm 40. I just have to last another 36 years for my life expectancy, and then I don't care what happens.
Well, I would argue that like we're on the verge of so many amazing technologies. So I don't think you're going to be dead at 76. I mean, we could be on the verge of an amazing expansion in lifespan, which, by the way, has huge sociological and economic impacts, a lot of them bad, because we have people retiring at 65 and they think they're going to live off the government for, you know, another 65 years or another 100 years after that. Then we've got a real money printing problem coming up. But yeah. Okay. So don't have kids, I assume. Is what
No.
Yeah. Okay.
But your point about extended longevity, I mean, that makes the argument one from academic to practical. If let's say also in technology is going to make it so I live to 120. Well, now I do care whether or not the United States could keep up the world reserve currency game. So whether you're arguing from a practical standpoint because you have children or grandchildren and you want their world to be better, or maybe more of a philosophical, moral standpoint if you're a true economist or you want to do what's best for society and help humanity down the road for thousands of years to come, you would argue that the United States is in decline and that pursuing such basically socialist and parasitic policies are not good at all for any country, should never be repeated again.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the policies we've had are just ridiculous. But talk about some of those other things. Just touch on some of those other things you said when you talked about the decline. You mentioned marriage. What did you mean by that? And you mentioned a few other things, which I can't remember now, right at the intro to the show.
Aside from economics or sociological stuff, but first and foremost among that would be marriage and the family. Now, previous to, I'd say the Great Society, the basic building block of society was the family. And to have a family, you need a husband and a wife. And in old times past, they had the children after they got married. And this provided a male and female role model to raise said kids to be well and better grounded in society. Now that's completely thrown out the window. Everyone's getting divorced. I thought my generation, Gen X, would learn from the baby boomers and eschew divorce and be a little bit more serious. Apparently they haven't learned their lesson. We're divorcing at rates just as much. And most people aren't even getting married. There's no longer any shame of having kids. And now what you start to see is the government increasingly replacing men as the role of father, breadwinner, head of household. And men are basically being replaced by a government check. Not all places, but increasingly so.
In other words, as Dr. Warren Farrell, who you're probably familiar with, he talks about that in his exceptional book called The Myth of Male Power. I'm sure I'll get some hate mail from the ladies out there who, you know, a few of them really hate him, but a lot of them love him and agree with him. You know, men are under attack, but you know, you have this situation where women are in essence marrying the government. They're marrying the state. And so that has really changed the dynamics, but maybe it has in a good way. I mean, my grandparents, who were married for many, many years and had, I would argue, a pretty bad marriage. My grandfather was uneducated, verbally abusive. That was not a good relationship, okay? And they didn't even sleep on the same floor of the house, okay? Like, he slept downstairs from whenever I remember, and she slept upstairs. But that was back when you got married for survival and for economic reasons. And, I mean, isn't it better for women that you don't have to do that? I mean, you certainly would agree with that, right? Okay.
Forget the women. Okay. Forget the husbands. Okay. We're talking about kids. You know, if you're not going to have kids, okay, you're right. Marriage is kind of obsolete. You don't need to have this social contract. Certainly, women can make their own money. They can have their own career. Right. My primary concern is the future, because that's all that really matters. And if you're going to have kids, now you do need a father and a mother involved, ideally. And they need to stick together, and they need to raise these children. Because if you look at the statistics, you want to talk about the number one, I think it is even the number one predictor of crime, disease, alcoholism, drug use, further illegitimate children, et cetera, all these social ills, it comes from broken families. It's not for the act of having children should be a selfless one. Once you have a kid, your life is over. It's done. You brought an innocent little child into the world that's going to require 18 years of your support. And if you're also, well,
it's more than 18, Aaron. It's more than 18 years, by the way.
It shows you the hubris, arrogance, and selfishness of today's generations where, oh, we'll drop the kid off at daycare. Oh, I'll ship a kid off to school. And I don't know. I just wanted to have the kids like I wanted to have an SUV. That's in part why we have the decline, because we no longer value a child or view the family as the unit basic building block of the economy. And so now we break that up, and now the future generation, I mean, come on, look at the millennials. I mean, my generation is pretty bad, but look at these millennials. They got trigger warnings. They need safe rooms. They're the biggest bunch of crybabies. Look at the OWS and these hipsters. They're the biggest bunch of crybabies compared to like their World War II counterparts who are charging the beaches of Normandy. That's the consequence. And unfortunately, that's where all your future economic growth comes, is from the future.
What did you mean by trigger warnings and safe rooms? I don't know what you meant by that.
You ever heard about the trigger warnings or safe rooms?
Well, I mean, a safe room like a panic room?
Like in schools now, colleges, I mean, you have to mention trigger warnings in case you say something that might offend them. If some speaker comes to school now, a college that people don't disagree with, typically people on the left, they have now these safe rooms that involve like cuddly bears and easy playing music and cookies and milk so that you can calm down and not suffer from. I'm not making this up.
I did not know this. This is news to me. You mean, so you're saying this is a political correctness discussion is what you're saying, right? That when someone comes to a university to express a center or maybe a right-wing viewpoint, the leftists get all upset and they got to go to their room to calm down and hug a teddy bear? You're kidding me. You are kidding me. I can't believe this.
Your grandfather, my grandfathers, one grandfather I had hit the beaches of Iwo Jima. The other grandfather I had was over in St. Lowe, and the guy next to him got snipered. These guys were 24 and 26 at the time. Now compare that to people who have like, you know, Pat Buchanan comes to campus and now they got to go running and get to their safety room.
They got
to
lynch him first, you know, God forbid. I mean, you know, you can't. I mean, John Stossel did a great show on that, how, you know, there's just no free speech in the university system. It's so far left and so full of judgment and hate. It's just unrealistic. It's just a completely unrealistic world.
Right. And even what Seinfeld said that he won't do, and Chris Rock, all these comedians won't do colleges anymore because they can't even be crass or politically incorrect.
And Seinfeld's not crass at all, by the way.
Well, tell him that.
Chris Rock, I could understand, but Seinfeld? Are you kidding? Seinfeld's clean.
What's the deal? I mean, yeah, I mean, that is why I believe there's going to be a decline, at least a decline, maybe not an outright collapse, because, of course, you know, we have our currency and the world reserve currency. But and already it's proving empirically there is a decline. There's going to continue to be a decline, because if you look at the children who are our future, they're pathetic. They're hopeless. Not to say, I mean, certainly there's some engineers and hardworking millennials, no doubt. And they listen to my podcast and they're on my team. But their contemporaries, my goodness, we are talking a zero, if not negative, net present value, economic present value of this generation. They are not going to be able to grow this economy.
All right. So let's talk about that a little bit. So in some ways, I agree with you. In some ways, I disagree. First of all, isn't it a reasonable idea that this is the whole point of progress? The world is supposed to get more peaceful. Life is supposed to get easier. I mean, certainly The people who fought in World War II that you referenced had it easier than the people who lived in the Dark Ages, right? So, you know, I mean, we can all argue. I mean, I guess every generation probably sort of laments that type of stuff and says, you know, this generation is so spoiled. They've got everything. They got iPhones. But, you know, the last generation said they got everything. You know, I had to walk to school and it was uphill both ways. You know, I mean, don't we always say that if we look at it from a historical perspective? I mean, or no?
You're right. And things are easier today. But forget whether it's easier and things are more peaceful. If you look at crime, that's one thing where things actually are improving. Crime is going down. Violence is going down globally, even in the United States.
But we should mention, though, even though you say that, and I'm sure you know this, those statistics are very manipulated, like the inflation rate, like the unemployment rate, like the GDP, like everything nowadays. But, you know, we don't need to parse that up. That's a long discussion.
Right. Got to go with the data that you've got. Yeah. You're right. Technology is getting better. Crime is going down. Things are safer. This is all true. And medical advances are coming in. My primary concern is what's going to torpedo it all is the economics of it. If you want to nail it down to one thing, it's unfunded liabilities. We have made all these promises in terms of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Lord knows how many pension problems are floating out there between the public and private sectors. But we are decreasing in economic growth. And while certain other things are doing well, economic growth, one of my favorite charts, if I die, this is what I want to put on my tombstone, not my name, not my date of birth or when I died. It's a chart showing the rolling 20-year average of GDP. Thus, it smooths it out.
You're a funny guy. I love it.
Well, no, it's just true. Because who cares what my name is? I want to see this chart. Mm-hmm. And so if you look back between the 40s and the 60s, that 20-year period, economic growth in the United States was 4.25%. It averaged out to be about that. Today, I'd have to update the charts, especially with the lousy GDP figures we had the past 3 or 4 quarters. We're down to 2.25%. That is not going to pay for all the promises 50 years of previous generations had made to themselves. And so while technology will advance, computers will advance, the internet will advance, medical things will advance, we really got to get our financial ship in shape and in order here, because that will torpedo it all. And so that, yes, things are going to be easier in certain aspects. Things have been easier than they were back in the old days. These are getting better in that regard. But it's largely been built off of this kicking the can down the road and this huge $18 trillion subsidy that we've had through government debt spending.
It's an interesting time for sure. Do you think technology could just sort of save us all? Can we sort of, if you will, Aaron, paper over all of these problems with technology? I mean, it's pretty powerful what's going on. And I assume also, looking back to the past, that this is what prior generations thought also. When the automobile came about, when the electric light came about, when the telephone, you know, the steam engine, whatever it was, whatever, you know, if it was germ theory back to the days of Joseph Lister, they probably thought all of this too, that, you know, technology is amazing. But I just got to think that, like, right now, it feels like we are really at this inflection point. And largely because of the networked world, with the world is sharing ideas and communicating with each other, in such a frictionless, immediate way nowadays, that the compounding effect of that is pretty remarkable. It's not like it was before.
It is and it isn't. I mean, now, there have been instances in history where technology has saved us. And the way to get out of debt problems is, historically for countries, has been not to pay off your debts, but to grow your economy so much that your debt to GDP is irrelevant.
Yeah, that's a legit way out. You know, grow your way out of it. Not inflate your way out of it. Grow your way out of it.
Grow your way out. Right. So if you only make $30,000 a year and you have $100,000 in debt, well, that's pretty bad. Well, one solution is to pay it off. Well, the other solution is to make $200,000 a year, which takes some doing and technological advances. But that's at an individual level. You just scale it up to a country level. Historically, though, the way we've gone out of it, you default. And the reason why is, you know, I will admit to being a bit of a misanthrope, but it's only because I've studied history, that's what people have done. People are selfish. They're lazy. Look at Germany, Weimar. Now, of course, they had post-World War I. They default. Argentina, pretty much any Central and South American country has defaulted. Russia defaulted.
The U.S. has the luxury of not having to default in the way that other countries have to because of that reserve currency. it's such a handy thing, I tell you, that we can just inflate our way out rather than default our way out.
Right. To grow our way out of it requires that we have a work ethic, requires that we have people that will major in the right subjects, requires people to say, I'm not going to major in sociology and go vote for Bernie Sanders. I'm going to major in engineering and create something and contribute to this economic growth and technological growth.
Bernie Sanders, it's a mind-boggling that he can actually talk and keep a straight face with the stuff he says. I mean, he is a pure socialist idiot. It's amazing to me. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, I like because the way she calls the Wall Street banker crooks onto the carpet. But Bernie Sanders, I mean, that guy's just, he's out to lunch. It's, right. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, I think he's actually going to win it, but that's
wow, scary.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's not. I'm sorry too. It's not like, you know, I want the Green Bay Packers to win every year, but they don't. You know, it's just whether they win or not is an issue. But I think the way you look at the younger generations, how they vote, it's typically leftist. They vote for more. I mean, these idiot kids voted in Obama twice and effectively destroyed their own careers without even knowing it.
And they haven't even noticed, Aaron. It's mind-boggling. Like, they have no... You know what? I was just talking to a buddy of mine about this the other day, and we were talking about girls and how literally we've noticed it has changed in the past 15 years. I mean, I used to date girls that had real corporate jobs. And I'm not saying having a corporate job is that great, but the difference being, you know, nowadays it's like waitress, yoga teacher, you know, and listen, I love yoga, okay? And I'm glad there are yoga teachers out there. But I mean, these aren't $70,000 a year jobs, okay? They're, you know, for like beginning your career. Go to school, get a job as a pharmaceutical rep. I can't stand pharmaceutical companies. It's just an example. Okay. But, you get the idea. Like, the kinds of jobs we're producing, by and large, unless you're an entrepreneur or a freelancer, and so many people just have to be nowadays. I'm not sure they even want to. They just have to be because that's the world in which we find ourselves. They are not, like, what I'm going to call, in quotes, real jobs. It's just like we've got this whole generation of people kind of bouncing from this thing to that thing. And you know what I mean?
They're hobbies.
Yeah, they're like hobbies.
She works at the nonprofit. Yeah. She works in a political campaign. Oh, she got the grant money. And this isn't just women. There's men who do this too, obviously.
Oh, well, of course.
This is where the generation, it's like, I like to call it Socialism Inc., the irony intended. It's like there is, you know, a professional industry, an organization that is basically there to make work jobs for people who can't otherwise be employed in the productive parts of the economy.
The millennial generation, I just kind of wonder, when are some of these people going to get serious about their lives? And some of them are, for sure. There are some really bright people in the Gen Y demographic cohort, for sure, that are motivated. But, you know, I don't know. It's very anecdotal, but you look at this article on Zero Hedge recently that talked about how the job creation is in the waiter and the waitress category. These aren't manufacturing jobs. They're not corporate jobs. These are not like real jobs. And that's what my buddy and I were talking about with, you know, the girls we've dated over the years when we talked about that. It really is changing. And they don't know by voting Obama in twice that they have fundamentally shifted the tenor of the United States. It really is quite different.
Right. Well, I doubt, and I'm being serious, I doubt, I always do a test. I kind of ask everyone when I run into a younger something. I always try and ask.
A younger something.
A younger something.
You are talking like an old man, aren't you, at 40?
I try and find out if they know the difference between a million and a trillion. And scarily, about 65, 70% of them don't. And you ask them if they know the difference between the public sector and the private sector, they don't. They're just voting with their feelings and their emotions and their hearts. And they're not even aware. Because if you don't know the difference between a million and a trillion, there's such a Mount Everest of reprogramming and education and explaining that has to go into it that person is pretty much lost. You need hours with that person. And not to mention they're so indoctrinated when you try and explain it to them, they don't believe you. Right. And so it's kind of a futile endeavor, which is, again, why I write Enjoy the Decline, because there's an admitted sound of defeatism in the book.
Yeah, right, right. Well, it certainly is. Okay, so let me ask you a question then, Aaron. How should we enjoy the decline? Let's say everything you say is right, that we're all basically screwed, we're going to hell in a handbasket. How do we enjoy the decline? That's my fatalistic question for you.
Two things. One, minimalism. The smaller you are, the less you need to survive, the easier this will be. I obviously predict increasingly progressive taxation. So if you're making $100,000, that's going to be targeted. If you have a lot of wealth, that's going to be targeted. I say get by on as little as you can. Now, me personally, I could fit everything into my pickup truck, everything I own, except for my Star Wars arcade game that requires an extra trip. But aside from that, I got about 2 bags worth of clothes, my toiletries, my PlayStation 4, my laptop, and my computer, you know, and a sleeping bag. We're off to the race. I don't need a big house. So when you scale
sound very grown up either, right? Everything you're saying, does it?
Yeah, but what's going on? I pay my bills. I've never missed a payment on my mortgage. Just because I live in a small house and have a renter upstairs, that's fiscal responsibility. And I this is all I need. I don't even spend most of my time at home. But driving this minimalism, though, and this is another key aspect, and this is probably the most important thing about enjoying the decline, how you actually enjoy it, is to realize the most important thing is not that you have a 55-inch screen TV or the latest PlayStation 4 game or that you could afford sushi. It is other people. It is your friends and your family and your conversation. It is being able to sit with your buddy Bill and talk to him over a beer about whatever it is you want to talk about. Because in the end, I mean, you can have a Ferrari, you can have the most souped-up computer. In the end, those things are just finite, limited, non-sentient entities. They really can't interact with you. They're a one-way type of attention. Whereas human beings, those are the only things you can love. Those are the only things you can enjoy. Those are the only things you can. So, I mean,
okay, enjoy. So, to sum that up, it's enjoy each other, enjoy the experience of life. And I would certainly agree with you. One of the few books that I've gone through now 3 times is Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul. And that's exactly what he talks about. You know, most people are trying to collect life when all you really have is the experience of life. That's all it is, you know. And so that's good advice. I would agree with you. We've got to keep a balance of that. Certainly.
Right. And friends are free.
Yeah, right.
Girlfriends are free. Yeah, you don't. Well, I mean, girlfriends are sort of free. You
get a, girlfriends are not free.
My buddy Ken never asked me for paying for dinner. But generally speaking, friends and loved ones are free. And they'll provide you an infinitely more amount of happiness and enjoyment in life than any Ferrari ever could.
Yeah, good advice. Totally agree with that. Okay, any other tips on enjoying the decline?
Try to let go. I know we all, you know, we'll read Zero Hedge or Drudge or go to the news or whatever. Or you see a Bernie Sanders or you'll see some insane, or you'll hear about trigger warnings and safe rooms for the first time. You got to let it go. You got to step back and see, you know what? That's out there. That's the national level. What about my own personal life? Do I have a cute wife? Do I have a cute girlfriend? Does she love me? Do I have some good friends? Enjoy that life. It's local. It's what you surround yourself with that is going to make you happy. Mm-hmm. So try not to let the stuff you don't control bother you. Right? Bernie Sanders gets elected. I'm not going to get upset that night. Yeah, I'm just going to drink the same drink I always drink and play the video games I always do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Any other tips?
Don't major in the liberal arts if you're a younger person.
That's great advice. I'll look through Craigslist or I'll look at job boards and so forth just to kind of get a gauge as to the economy and kind of what's going on out there. It's very anecdotal, but it's better than not looking at all. And I just don't see anybody hiring philosophy majors or feminist studies or, you know, any of these various racial studies majors. You know, nobody's hiring for those positions. You know, art history majors don't get hired either. And, you know, all of this stuff, it is important to culture in the long run, but a career, a job, especially in a tough economy, if we are going to face tough times ahead, as you think we are, practical sciences, that's where it's at. You know, become an engineer, do something that actually creates something real. It's a very important thing.
Yeah, no, it makes your life a lot easier is if you major in the right thing. And the arts, don't worry, artists will take care of that. You don't need to go to college on how to make a painting. But you do probably have to go to college to learn how to design a computer or build a bridge. And so if you're younger or you're looking to, you know, skill up, I mean, I wrote a book called Worthless in 2012. And even to this day, that's still one of my bestsellers, simply because people want to know. I think there's a genuine concern, like, whoa, before I drop 75 grand and 4 years of my life on this, maybe I ought to make it worthwhile. So I believe there's another silver lining to the cloud. I do believe there is this undercurrent of people who want to make their future lives a lot easier, are really starting to look at what they major in as a serious choice.
Yeah, and whether they go to college at all is another good question.
Correct.
Because
yeah.
I'm definitely not against education. I'm very much for it, but college has become an epic scam, mm-hmm. and the government is the perpetrator, or at least the accomplice, by throwing so much money at insuring student loans. That's what's caused the inflation. It's just that classic definition: limited supply of goods and services and too many dollars chasing it. You're going to have college tuition inflate at 3 or 4 times the rate of inflation. It's obscene what these universities are doing to these kids. You know, it's just obscene.
But these kids can't even tell the difference between a million and a trillion.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why are you going to try and bother explaining to them Austrian definition of inflation?
Yeah, you mean they're not much into Austrian economics at these universities? Huh? No, I guess not.
No, they're not. They're really not.
Yeah, the Austrian school, it's all the Keynesian school nowadays. Very interesting. Aaron, where can people find out more about your work, get your books, etc.?
You could go to my flagship website, which is captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. But like pretty much, I guess, any kind of online media person, I have a YouTube channel. So just search Aaron Clary. It's Clarey. Twitter. I got Twitter. And then my books just go to Amazon.com, but they're also on my main site. And then I have my consulting division, which I won't curse, but it is aholeconsulting.com. It is spelled out. And oh, you laugh, but that's why I'm sitting on my bed with my laptop right now and not at a cubicle office, is because of ideas like that. But if you have a question or something, you can go to aholeconsulting.com and
spelled out.
Well, ASS.
Yeah, I got it. We got it. You don't need to spell it. But just the full length word. All right. Aaron Clary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.